The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
I want to talk today about Fox News and its coverage, or perhaps I should say non-coverage, of 2,000 Mules. I'll talk a little bit about the incident with Tucker Carlson. And you'll see I'm going to do this in a manner that's not trying to pick a fight with Fox News, but rather to steer them in the right direction. Now, I want to reveal how the leak to save Roe v. Wade has backfired and consolidated justices in their original positions. Congressman Steve Scalise will join me. We're going to talk about current issues, the future of the GOP, election integrity, and then more Dante. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
The subject of 2,000 Mules, as far as I know, has not been mentioned on Fox News Channel. And this is, to put it mildly, odd. And it's odd in many ways. It's not as if the people at Fox don't think that I'm a credible figure. I mean, I've been appearing pretty much weekly on Fox. I don't think it's they could say that this is not news. This is a topic everyone's talking about. It's been trending almost constantly on Twitter. And it can't be also that Fox is afraid of litigation. Oh, we're being sued by Dominion, Dinesh, because our movie doesn't talk about that. We don't talk about the machines. We're talking about old school fraud. And we're talking about using official surveillance video taken by the states themselves and a very reliable technology called geo-tracking. Again, we're not asking Fox to like cheerlead for the movie, embrace the movie, but we're just asking why a news network won't cover something that quite clearly is news, quite clearly is on people's minds, even more on the minds of its own audience. So there's intense public interest. No one can claim the issue is not important. No one can claim that this is not a novel contribution to the debate. And yet, you know, mum, zip, not a word. Now, I think what I find a little galling about this is that regularly over the past year, I've heard Fox News pundits and hosts, you know, denouncing the mainstream media for censoring and suppressing the Hunter Biden story. To them, oh, that was shocking. That had an impact on the election. That was unconscionable behavior. That's the media, and it's showing its usual irresponsibility. Well, what is the real difference between the mainstream media shutting down, refusing to say a word about the Hunter Biden story in the weeks leading up to the election, and Fox News Channel refusing to say a word about 2,000 Mules now? Both stories are relevant to the election. Both are legitimate news stories. Both are open to discussion and debate. But the point is that debate is not being permitted. Now, one possibility, of course, is it's all the fault of the lawyers. And that could be. I mean, it could be. But if it is, think of what that means. These lawyers at Fox, who handled the whole issue incompetently in the beginning, you know, got a massive lawsuit as a result of it, are now trying to cover their rear ends by blocking a story that contains no legal liability, as far as I can see. In other words, they're now trying to use their old malpractice, if you will, and malpractice here, I just mean in the sense of bungled practices, to justify shutting down a completely legitimate story that does not raise the same issues that they're dealing with in their litigation. So these are just, I mean, if it's the lawyers doing it, I say fire the lawyers, get rid of them, because these are people who are preventing a news network from doing news. It's always a mistake to be captive to lawyers, by the way, in any business. Lawyers tell you what you can and can't do, but at the same time, lawyers sometimes use the legal pretext to shut down issues that are legitimate, that actually have nothing to do with the law itself. Now, with this, let me turn to the specific issue of Tucker Carlson and give you a little bit of context. I talked about this a little bit before, but what I want to do now is focus a little bit on these texts that were sent to me by Justin B. Wells. Now, Justin B. Wells, you can find him on Twitter. He's sort of the Tucker Carlson's like manager. Then let me quote him. Dinesh, he says, misspelling my name. Justin Wells here, VP and EP, executive producer of everything in the Tucker world. I just want you to know that I/we, very interesting formulation. I/we means he's not just speaking for himself, he's speaking also for Tucker. We won't forget your little stunt today. What's my little stunt? It's not letting him use my trailer. In other words, not letting him use a trailer that he wanted to cut the front and the back off of to steal the middle of it and pretend like he and Tucker had produced it. Now, he continues, if you want to decide how much time to give content on the most watched show in America, then I suggest you produce one in the future. Look, I wasn't talking about producing my own show. The issue here is simply that he was trying to pirate my content. And I said, you know, don't do it. You don't have to talk about the subject, but don't steal our content. We'll be right back to talk more about this. Mike Lindell and MyPillow are offering a BOGO, buy one, get one extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillow, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows, and so much more. Just go to MyPillow.com, use promo code Dinesh, or call 800-876-0227. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to buy one, get one free on select products. By the way, you'll also get Mike's book absolutely free with any purchase. Call 800-876-0227 or go to MyPillow.com. If you want to get the discounts, don't forget promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. I'm continuing my presentation of the texts of Justin B. Wells, Tucker's vice president and executive producer. He's now talking to me. And he goes, you effed over an important show, an ally that was trying to do you a solid. Yeah, he's trying to do me a favor by stealing my content. But now is where I really begin to object. Don't ever bother working on anything with us in the future. So kind of like, you're done with us. First of all, I've never been on Tucker. So this is like a restaurant that I've never eaten in telling me that I'm not going to be able to eat there in the future. Wow. And never try to bully my team again. Today's move was short-sighted and dumb. Good luck with everything in the future. Now, here's my reply. Justin, I told Alex, this is Tucker's other producer, in advance, all caps, that we were offering the trailer as a single piece. I made it clear we did not want it cut, so there were no surprises here, no stunts. You guys want to take our content that we produce at considerable expense and effort, cut out all references to the film, and then run with it as your story. This doesn't strike me as very fair or decent, even if you do have, quote, the most watched show in America. I simply told Alex we will try and place it elsewhere because our original terms are unacceptable to you. That's my reply. Note the tone of it. And now here comes his reply. Dinesh, we booked Catherine ages ago, Catherine Engelbrecht. The segment came through her. The trailer and everything happened this week. We wanted to help you out. We would have made references to the film, absolutely. We would never cut out references to the film and pass off your story as ours. Our content is far superior to yours. I mean, think about it. I'm making a movie. He's running a TV show. I'm quite confident in that. You live in a fantasy world. You effed with our booking on the day of the segment. I don't take your tactic, stunt, or a-hole move lightly. If you want a full 90 seconds for your trailer, then buy an ad on the show for a full 90 seconds. No more free ads for you. Thanks for trying, though. And then I reply, Catherine is her own person. I produced the trailer, and that was my only condition that I made clear to Alex, use all of it or don't use it. He understood and said so. I'm not party to any other discussions, so where have I acted badly here? You knew what my terms were, but decided to go a different route. That's fine. But I am at liberty, am I not, to hold to my original condition. I didn't mess up your schedule. You presumed you could just go ahead and cut the trailer, and that I would give in and say, fine. I'm producing this movie in conjunction with Salem Media, and they don't want to have it cut. So this is not about who lives in a fantasy world. I don't, and I'm not suggesting you do either. I'm just trying to make a case for the consistency and reasonableness of my position. To which he replies, this is Justin B. Wells, BS, he spells it out. You've wasted enough of our time. We feel terrible for Catherine, though. I didn't know what your terms were. You dumped them on us at the last minute. You and Salem Media are dictating how much of a trailer a news show runs that's trying to give you promotion. I suspect the Today Show cut the Titanic trailer when they had Leo and Kate on back in 1996. Who are you trying to, who are you to create bogus terms on length of promotional content when we're trying to help you out? Pathetic. There's nothing reasonable about your position. It's moronic. Now, look, I'm only doing this a little bit verbatim because I want to step back and ask a question. What corporation in America deals with people in this way? And again, we're not talking even about a stranger. We're talking about somebody who appears regularly on the network. I'm just drawing a contrast between the difference of tone, between the way I'm addressing this guy. I'm always trying to be polite, whatever our disagreement, kind of bring it back to a civilized conversation. And look at the bullying, abusive tone being employed. And again, Justin B. Wells makes it really clear he's not speaking for himself. To go back to his first text, I want you to know that we won't forget your little stunt today. And so the important point to realize here is that with Fox News, with a lot of things, things aren't the way it seems. You know, I look on social media, there's Tucker, he's wearing his fisherman's jacket. He's got the aw shucks attitude. He's one of the guys. But behind the scenes, this is how these people operate. They're nasty. They're vicious. They threaten you. They try to strong arm you. It's our way or the highway. It's let us steal your trailer, pretend it's our content, and if you object, you know, you're banned permanently from the show. I mean, this is a very dysfunctional way of operating. So at the very least, I think it's decent, if you want to ask me what the next step is, to issue a public apology and say, hey, listen, we treated this guy badly. We shouldn't have done it this way. And so I'm appealing to Suzanne Scott, who's the head of Fox, to introduce not just some discipline, but some civility into something that has, I think, quite clearly gone off the rails. Do you have trouble hearing or know someone who does? You got to check out MD Hearing Aid. MD Hearing Aid is an FDA-registered, rechargeable hearing aid that costs a fraction of what typical hearing aids cost. I'll let my mother-in-law tell you, she's a customer.
Hello? I just received my new hearing aids, Bolt Plus, and I've tried them on. I want you to see my ears, how they fit. Even with my glasses, they fit very well. And I would highly recommend these hearing aids. I am very, very pleased with my product. Thank you so much.
So get clinic-level care for 80% less with MD Hearing Aid. Go to mdhearing.com. Use promo code Dinesh to get their new buy one, get one. The cost is $149.99 each when you buy a pair. It's quite a deal. Plus, they're adding a free extra charging case, $100 value just for my listeners. So head to mdhearing.com and use our promo code Dinesh. In the last segment, I quoted... from his text, I quoted Justin B. Wells saying, hey, Dinesh, we would never try to discuss the content of your movie without crediting you, without naming the movie, without giving you your due. And yet, just recently, Tucker Carlson and Justin B. Wells invited Catherine Engelbrecht to go on the show. And right before the show, they go, Catherine, I wasn't party to the conversation, so I'm obviously paraphrasing here. Do not mention 2,000 Mules. So the point is, they did, in effect, discuss the movie without mentioning the movie. But this happened at a time when everybody else knew. Everybody else had already been talking about the movie. And so it actually made the whole Tucker segment look weird, because how odd it is to be discussing what's in a movie and essentially outlaw. I mean, it's one thing, again, Tucker doesn't have to mention the movie, but to actually instruct the guest, who is an executive producer of the movie. And again, in a way, what were they doing? They're browbeating Catherine. And Catherine was, Catherine went along, and in fact, I was notified about this right before it happened, and I was like, you know what, go on Tucker. I mean, I'm not going to say not to go on Tucker. So I did not object, but I want to emphasize that it's a continuation of the same sort of barbarism that I've had in dealing with this show from the beginning. In a sense, the same kind of strong arm tactics applied to me, now applied to Catherine. And so this becomes revealing of a person's character. Now, again, for a while, I thought, is this like Justin B. Wells? Is he just a particularly nasty individual who somehow it's all gone to his head? He thinks he is Tucker. You know, he thinks he's the gateway. You know, we've been talking about Dante and his Inferno and people who sort of think that they are the emperor because they control who goes in and out the door. It could be that this guy is just out of control. And in that case, I think Tucker should get rid of him. But the other possibility, which is a little more eerie, is that this is actually is Tucker, and that Justin B. Wells is kind of his stooge. Justin B. Wells plays the bad cop, and then Tucker's like, you know, he puts on his, oh yeah, it's an interesting point you made. So I don't know what it is, to be honest, but I'm just giving you the facts and letting you decide. Now, I want to turn and pivot, talk about abortion. Big vote in the Senate. Schumer sort of drives it through to a vote. He's like, we're going to codify abortion in law, and the vote goes down 49-51. I mean, think about it. Manchin joins a solid phalanx of 50 Republicans and the Democratic attempt to, they say, codify Roe. But it wasn't codifying Roe. Essentially, they were trying to create an absolute right to abortion for the full 9 months. You could do it any time in the 9 months. And that's not what Roe says, by the way. Roe essentially says that, yeah, in the beginning, a woman has a right to an abortion, but as the fetus comes closer to term, then the state has an interest in regulation. And even though in practice those regulations have had to be very, very minor, parental notification, a few things like that, and nevertheless, this was going beyond Roe. In fact, that was Manchin's reason for saying, I'm not on board. It's amazing the number of news outlets in the aftermath of this say, oh, the Democrats lost on a filibuster. No, there was no filibuster. The filibuster is when you need 60 votes. You have a majority, and Republicans have to keep talking on and on and on to prevent it from coming to a vote. So I don't know if you have people in influential sectors of the media who don't know the difference between a straight out vote and a filibuster, or if they know and they were just lying to give the idea that, you know, the Democrats were united on this one. No, they weren't. They lost a key vote. And in fact, they lost a majority voted against them. And protests continue outside the homes of the justices. So clearly there's a kind of intimidation going on here. But it doesn't seem to be working. I say this because there's an article in Politico. Now, Politico is the outlet that broke the news about the leak. And Politico reports that the justices are kind of digging in. Apparently, they're meeting today. For the first time in person to talk about this decision. Needless to say, they're going to have to talk about the leak, and they're going to talk about the substance of the decision. Now, normally in the process, when you have a majority decision, it's written by, in this case, Alito, the draft is circulated, dissenting opinions are then written and presented, Alito then reconsiders, justices look at those dissents to see if they're persuaded to change. Apparently, none of this has happened. Apparently, the only decision that's out there is the original Alito decision. And I think what this means is that the process has, in a sense, been frozen. Now, this was a decision apparently intended for release at the end of June. And quite honestly, I think it's not a good idea to hold off the release. I think Roberts probably knows that, whatever the outcome of the decision, and it's pretty clear it's going to be a 5-4 vote to strike down Roe with a maybe partly dissenting decision by Justice Roberts saying, in effect, I would have upheld Roe for the first 15 weeks and then essentially invalidated it beyond that. So a partial affirmation of Roe, obviously, the other justices would be in dissent. And I'm pretty sure that one of them or one of their clerks is, in fact, the leaker. So this shows that the kind of corruption that we've seen in our other institutions, the FBI, the media, even the DOJ, the CDC, this has now permeated the inner sanctum of the court itself. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health. Hey, exercising, climbing stairs, all the things that young people take for granted. Well, that's not things that we have to stop just because we get older. Well, neither do you have to just endure the normal aging aches and pains. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. Debbie loves using Relief Factor because when her shoulder started acting up about a year or so ago, it was the only thing that worked for her, and she knows if she quits taking it, the pain is going to come right back. So she's like, I'm not going to be without this again. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That number again, 833-690-7246, or go to relieffactor.com. You'll feel the difference. Guys, I'm really happy to welcome to the podcast Congressman Steve Scalise, U.S. Congressman from Louisiana, the 1st Congressional District. He's the House Minority Whip, and so he's a key figure in shaping Republican strategy going forward. He's also a member of the Energy and Commerce Committee. Steve, what a pleasure. Your first time on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. As I look around the country, there's so much chaos on so many fronts going on with Biden. Did you expect this administration to be so far off the rails going into the midterms?
Well, Dinesh, first, great to be with you. And I know we've met in person in other settings, but it's great to be with you on this podcast. And yeah, like if you think about it right now, I mean, we are a nation in crisis, and it's on so many fronts. It's not like we've got an issue just in one area of the country. You know, we've got an inflation crisis, gasoline price crisis. We've got a border crisis. You know, you've got the government going after parents who get involved in their kids' education, but then they're encouraging people to break federal law and go protest in front of Supreme Court justices' houses to try to change the results of a court decision. I mean, this is how upside down things are. And you wonder why people are so livid and angry with President Biden's failures on all of these fronts. I mean, it's hurting families, low-income families especially, paying more for everything, not just gasoline prices, but everything. And it was so much better 2 years ago, you know, in terms of an economy ready to come back, people ready to come out of COVID with low gas prices, strong energy supply, a secure border. How much has changed in 2 years, I think, has shocked a lot of Americans, and not in a good way.
Now, in some ways, this makes it really easy for the GOP, because if Biden is bungling on all fronts, and if his poll ratings are plummeting, and he doesn't seem to know or care, the Republicans could sort of do nothing and probably do pretty well in the midterms. My question to you is, do you think the GOP needs a positive strategy of saying, listen, this is our agenda going forward? I mean, my mind is flashing back a little bit to 1994, Gingrich and the contract with America. If you elect us, we will do these things. So far, I don't think the Republicans have put forward that kind of agenda. Do they need to? Or is this a case that because it's a midterm, let's just make it a referendum on Biden?
Yeah, and in fact, we are working on that. And just starting with kind of where we are, you know, you can see, I mean, 32 Democrats have already said they're not running for reelection in the House. President Biden and Nancy Pelosi's popularity is in the tank, especially in swing districts around the country. We've got phenomenal candidates. I think we're going to have a great year, but there hasn't been an election yet. And there is no complacency. And by the way, I'm a big sports fan. I hate the prevent defense. So the idea that, you know, oh, we're going to win if we just sit back and do nothing is not who we are. It's not in our DNA. I'm a policy guy. I think now more than ever is the time to go run on a bold conservative agenda to show the country they're already convinced that President Biden and Nancy Pelosi have wrecked the economy, have destroyed so many of the fundamentals that make America great. But I think this is the best time to go show them what we're about, why conservative policy is so much better to fix these problems, to get parents more involved in their kids' education where they're shut out of schools. School choice, for example, Dinesh, never a better time to talk about school choice and bold energy policy. But we've been meeting with Newt Gingrich and a lot of others, but our members have come together, and we're working on that kind of contract with America document. And it'll probably be called Commitment to America. And we're looking at rolling it out this summer. And if you think about the contract with America in 94, it was rolled out closer to the election when people, you know, junkies like us are working on all of these issues all the time. But the public really starts focusing on elections by Labor Day. Once you get through primaries, we're still, no states finished their primaries even, you know, very few states have. So let's go to this summer, and you're going to see, and I think most Americans are going to be excited by this Commitment to America when they see what conservative policy can do to secure the border, to lower gas prices, to address the supply chain crisis, to secure our country. And oh, by the way, you look at the crime in the streets where the left has gone for defunding the police and letting people out on no bail, confronting some of those challenges as well. And I think there's never been a better time to contrast failed liberalism with bold conservatism.
One of the things I notice on social media is there's a lot of kind of skirmishing going on between people who see themselves as sort of the MAGA types versus the Republican establishment. Now, when I look at the actual issues, it doesn't seem like there's a radical difference of position. In other words, even people who call themselves American nationalists, it's kind of like if I were to say, you know, my family comes first, it doesn't mean I don't care about my neighbors or I don't care about my community. There's no reason why one can't combine America first with a kind of prudent internationalism. But here's my point. Is this a difference of substance or is this a difference of style? Obviously, it's important to have a united Republican Party. How do we heal these kind of temperamental breaches within the party?
Yeah, and a lot of this is the left who just still hates Donald Trump. And anything related to Donald Trump, they want to demonize, they want to cancel. You've seen it personally. I've seen it. The bottom line is people love those policies that were working under President Trump. And, you know, you can call it MAGA, you can call it America First, you know, but some people are trying to spin it into something it's not. It was not isolationism. And I think that's where a lot of the left tries to go. And I'll give you an example. You know, look at Europe. You've got Ukraine over there fighting against Russia. President Trump had a strong foreign policy where the bad guys around the world who have always been there, the bad guys of the world did not try to test Donald Trump. They knew this isn't a guy, you might not know what he's going to do, but you didn't want to find out. And they never had that problem with Barack Obama. You saw Russia move on Crimea and take Crimea in Ukraine. And then you saw, of course, what happened in Afghanistan under Biden and now Russia coming in on Ukraine. And so what President Trump did is say a lot of NATO allies thought he was going to get out of NATO. You know, and again, if it was just America and nobody else, then that would have been the case. It was never the case. President Trump never said, I want to get out of NATO. He said the commitment of NATO is America's going to help protect Europe. But every country, America and European countries, put up 2% of their GDP. And it turned out over decades, we were paying all the freight and Europe was paying less than half of 1% of their GDP. And over time, and I saw it firsthand, countries would brag to us, hey, we just passed a budget and we're going to cross 1%. We're at 1.5. I was in Poland just a few weeks ago. They bragged that now they are at 2% of GDP. We went to Romania. Not only are they at 2% of GDP right now funding NATO, they're going to be at 2.5%. That's a direct result of Donald Trump saying, America first, meaning I'm going to stand up for America when other countries are taking advantage of us. And by countries treating us fairly and us treating other countries fairly, it actually makes for better trade policy. It makes for better national security. And you saw that result. We had great domestic policy, the lowest unemployment we've ever had before COVID came along. And oh, by the way, it was President Trump's policies saying through Operation Warp Speed, we're going to confront and go create vaccines, therapeutics, ability for people to confront and shut down this virus so we can get back to our lives again. So America First does not mean we shut everybody out. We're not isolationists. It just means we're standing up for our country when other countries take advantage of us, and countries stopped taking advantage of us when Donald Trump was president. And those countries are taking advantage of us again, and unfortunately taking advantage of our allies around the world too, because of Joe Biden's weakness.
Let's take a pause. When we come back, I want to pivot and talk a little bit more about election integrity. Who likes to eat 6 servings of fruits and vegetables every single day? I mean, who can realistically do that? Balance of Nature provides that, and their products are 100% natural, vine-ripened, whole food, third-party tested. This is real science, real food, real nutrition. Debbie and I take 10 daily servings of fruits and veggies. Take a look, all in 6 small capsules, no trouble swallowing, always fresh, nothing artificial, they smell great. Debbie also swears by this, the fiber and spice, it keeps her regular. Invest in your health, invest in your life. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code BALANCE. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. I'm back with Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana, the 1st Congressional District. He's also House Minority Whip. Steve, we were talking about foreign policy, and I think you were making the point that Trump, if we think back even to Reagan, Trump was still in the Reagan tradition because Reagan was reluctant to commit troops abroad. Reagan had the Reagan doctrine, you know, let people fight for their own freedom. We'll help, but we have to make a distinction between our safety and other people's safety. Let's talk a little bit, if we may, about election integrity, because I think a lot of people are worried. Hey, listen, even if we have a great agenda, even if we run a great campaign, if we don't have election integrity, we're doomed. Do you agree?
You know, we've seen examples over years. And look, I come from a state, Dinesh, where we had voter fraud. In fact, when I was in the state legislature, we were able to get the evidence out there. And our elections commissioner, who was statewide elected, went to prison. He was a Democrat, lo and behold. The last Democrat to hold my seat in Congress went to prison for vote buying. So these people had to act like it just doesn't happen. It's happened before. We've got to be vigilant to make sure that there is integrity in all elections. And states ultimately are working on this at some level. Some states aren't. Georgia just passed laws to ensure the integrity of their elections. Texas did additional integrity measures. The left lied about them, by the way. But think about where the left wants to go. Nancy Pelosi's top priority was a bill to ban picture ID from being used in elections and to mandate same-day voter registration and give taxpayer funds to political campaigns. Can you imagine banning photo ID and mandating same-day voter registration as a recipe for voter fraud? You know, and clearly some states have laws like that. I think people want the integrity of the vote. Frankly, people want to get back to where we know the results on election night, not 3 days or 3 weeks after, for goodness sake. When you look at states like New York, that really undermines people's confidence when on election night, you see one thing happening and then, you know, middle of the night, weird things go on and then the results change and you don't find out for days and days later. You know, let's get back to finding out the results on election night, picture ID to verify. Everybody who's legally eligible to vote should be able to vote one time. And I'll fight for anybody's right to do that, whether they're going to vote for or against our candidates. Everybody has that right. But you don't have the right to go vote in somebody else's name or to sign up and register in someone else's name. And by removing picture ID, that really undermines people's faith in the process.
Do you think it's a good idea? I noticed some of these election integrity laws also ban the mass infusion of private money into the election offices or to pay for drop boxes. It seems like there was a virtual infiltration of the election offices by some of these nonprofit groups that were funded by Zuckerberg. I mean, do you think it's a prudent move to restrict and perhaps even outlaw that kind of private money from having that kind of leverage over our election administration?
Well, I think it's good to see the scrutiny that you're having come down on that. The fact that hundreds of millions of dollars went in privately to fund what normally is government operations on turnout, but only in selected areas. It's not like they said, hey, let's make sure everybody can vote. They only wanted certain people to vote. That's not what the system is set up to do. And especially when you take out a lot of the ballot integrity measures that are in place. You know, my state, again, we cleaned up our election laws after our elections commissioner went to jail, and we cleaned up the office itself, and it's professionally run. We have a Democrat governor today, but he was fairly elected because we cleaned up our system. Some states have cleaned it up. Some states still have problems out there. You know, but again, I mean, there's examples. You can go back elections over decades and show where there were real problems. and go clean those up, fix those problems. Even in Virginia, you saw, you know, they had really, you know, increased election integrity issues in the Youngkin election last year. And I think it instilled additional confidence, even in a blue state like Virginia, that it was a fair election and everybody agreed because they cleaned up some of those problems.
I mean, it seems that the Democrats have poisoned the rhetoric a little bit with the voter suppression allegation and the kind of invocation of the ancient memories, Jim Crow, this is the way it used to be in the 1920s and so on. I mean, I think it's important for Republicans not to be frightened away by those kinds of allegations, right?
Well, and think about this, Dinesh, when the CEO of Delta Airlines says it's Jim Crow to show a picture ID to vote, and then you try to get on a Delta airplane, what do you have to do to get on? You have to show a picture ID. So is that mean they're imposing Jim Crow on their own? This is ridiculous. People know better. They know that picture ID just makes sense to verify that everybody who's legally able to vote should be able to vote one time. It's pretty basic, common standard. Let's go ensure it.
Steve, we talked off camera about 2,000 meals. We're going to FedEx you a copy so you can watch the movie. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. Always a pleasure. Appreciate what you do, Dinesh.
Thank you.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
When we left off on Dante yesterday, we were in the circle of the sun, and Thomas Aquinas, the great Dominican scholar and philosopher, was praising the Franciscan founder, Francis of Assisi. And what you have in Canto 12 is sort of the opposite. And that is that Dante encounters the great Franciscan mystic, Bonaventure. And Bonaventure recounts to Dante, you might again expect him to be praising the Franciscans and all the great work that they're doing, the missionary work, the vows of poverty and chastity and so on. But no, what you get from Bonaventure is a praise of Dominic. And Dominic, of course, is the saint who is the founder of the Dominican order. Once again, the Dominicans are sort of the party of philosophy and wisdom and scholarship, and the Franciscans are the beggars in the street who call people to prayer and repentance. So for Dante, one represents the head, that's the Dominicans, and the other represents the heart. Now, it seems kind of obvious why we might praise the Franciscans. They're devoted to the spiritual life. They're calling people to prayer and repentance. Their point is, and this is a point, by the way, that foreshadows evangelical activism that comes in later centuries. Let's remember that this is all before the Reformation. So this is not a time to talk about distinctions within Christianity. There aren't any. There's only one church. And one of the points that Francis makes in the street is that church or our relationship with God is not reserved for Mass. It's not reserved for one day a week. It's not something we do periodically. It is something that needs to infuse our everyday life. In other words, we need Christ within us. Now, let's turn to what the contribution might be of Dominic, because here's Bonaventure who's praising Dominic, and he goes into the life of Dominic. And he begins this way. He says, the love that makes me beautiful moves me to speak about that other guide. So if one guide was Francis, the other guide is Dominic. We should not mention one without the other. Since both did battle in a single cause, so let their fame shine gloriously as one. Here's Dante making the point that the head and the heart, philosophy, if you will, and ministry go together, that they should not be separated one from the other. And then Bonaventure describes Dominic this way. He soon became a mighty theologian. And here a theologian and a philosopher, that distinction did not really clearly exist. So we're talking, he became a thinker, a diligent inspector of the vineyard. Now, this is a very interesting image. This is Dante kind of at his poetic, with his kind of poetic acuity. What's he getting? Why is he comparing a theologian, a philosopher, to an inspector of the vineyard? I think basically what Dante is saying is that it's really important to get the basic doctrine right. Dante is not talking about peripheral issues. In fact, we saw a little earlier that Dante sees that you have philosophers who disagree, and sometimes disagree on pretty important things, and they're sitting side by side in heaven. So Dante's point is not that because you made an error of theology, you misread a particular passage in Matthew or in the Old Testament, well, that's it, you're done. No, not at all. But what Dante is saying is that it is important for the church and for the body of Christ, the members of the church, to scrutinize the truth and make sure that it is in conformity with Scripture and with God's will. So doctrine is really important for Dante. It's not one of those things that sort of, you know, as long as your heart's in the right place, doctrine doesn't really matter. No, it does matter. All right. Now I'm going to fast forward to Canto 15, a very important canto, and I'm going to read it a little bit in the light of Inferno 15. By the way, here we are in the circle of Mars. So we're out of the circle of the sun. Remember, the sun represented wisdom, and Mars now represents courage. And again, we might expect to find in the circle of Mars courageous figures through history, but it turns out that for more than one canto, Dante runs into a very strange guy named Cacciaguida. And this guy turns out to be his own great-great-grandfather. He runs into one of his own forebears, a relative. He doesn't initially know that it's his relative. And by the way, Cacciaguida, Caccia and Guida. Guida means guide. And Caccia is the hunt. So the interesting significance of this name is a guide through, if you will, the hunt. That's what Cacciaguida means. And Dante's ancestor is going to have a very interesting conversation with Dante about Dante himself and about Florence, and I'll return to that in the next segment. In the circle of Mars, the circle of courage, Dante meets his own ancestor. He doesn't initially know who he is, and this is how the ancestor begins to speak to Dante, in a sense identifying himself, not by name, but by relationship. "Branch of my tree," he says, "the mere expectancy of whose arrival here gave me delight." So Cacciaguida is saying, "I've been waiting for you, Dante, and your very presence here fills me with delight. I was your root." In other words, "I'm family. I'm one of you. And you see here family in its kind of noblest and best sense." And the reason I say this is important is here we are in Canto 15, and our minds flash back to Inferno 15. This is what I call the horizontal reading of Dante, which is you move from Canto 15 in Paradiso to Purgatorio and right back to Inferno. And who do you see there? Well, you see the sodomite, Brunetto Latini, and he's talking to Dante as if he refers to Dante as family. He calls Dante my son. But in Brunetto's case, it was artificial. It was an attempt to appropriate Dante's genius to himself. It was one of those things where the teacher is trying to bask in the glory of the student, a kind of ersatz or fake type of a family appropriation, but not here. Here it's kind of the real thing. This is Dante's real ancestor. And let's see what Cacciaguida says to Dante. He begins really with what appears to be nothing more than an exercise in nostalgia, but I want to argue it's not that at all. "Florence, enclosed within her ancient walls, once lived in peace, a pure and temperate town. No necklace or tiara did she wear, no lavish gowns or fancy belts that were more striking than the woman they adorned. In those days, fathers had no cause to fear a daughter's birth. The marriageable age was not too low, the dowry not too high." And then he goes on in this vein for several other verses. "Oh, happy wives, each one of them was sure of her last resting place." And as you go through all this, it seems like what Dante is saying, and it's kind of funny to hear him say it, that Cacciaguida lives in Florence a century or two before Dante. And he's kind of saying, Dante seems to be implying that my Florence, Dante's Florence, has gotten really complex and really crowded, and life has become sort of a little bit more untrustworthy and you don't know everybody. And it seems like Cacciaguida is saying that Florence never used to be like that. It was much smaller, things were much simpler, they were in a sense much cleaner, everyone knew everyone. And again, this seems to be one of those just evocations of the good old days. But what I want to suggest is what Dante is getting at here is something very profound. And that is that we all remember from our own childhood a more innocent time in which, I mean, Debbie and I were talking about it this morning. We're talking about Venezuela in the late 60s and early 70s. We're talking about Mumbai, where I grew up, where our family had an old broken down car. But I think we were the only family that had a car in the whole street. So I rarely even heard the sound of a car. Everything was simpler. Everything was, in a way, more villagey, if I can put it a little bit that way. And I think what Dante is saying is not that we can recover that in reality. He's not saying, I want to go back. I want to repeal. I want to turn back the clock. I want to repeal progress. I don't like towns. I don't like apartments. I want everybody to be sort of have a plow. No, that's not what Dante is saying. But what Dante is saying, and what his ancestor is saying, is that although that original simplicity and innocence cannot be recovered, in fact, as a state of society, it can be recovered as a state of mind. In other words, don't lose some of that moral simplicity that you had when you were 10. Don't lose some of that kind of original relationship to nature, to other people, that sense of trust. Rousseau talks about this, by the way. If you read Rousseau when he's talking about the state of nature, Rousseau was misunderstood by Voltaire, who said in effect to Rousseau, you know, you're ridiculous. You're trying to take us back to when we all, you know, walked on around on all fours, kind of like an animal. And Voltaire's like, we live in a cultured society. What are you talking about? We can't go back to some state of nature. But Rousseau admits that you can't. Rousseau says, I'm not talking about going back and living with the bears. What Rousseau says is what cannot be recovered in fact can be recovered in a sense internally, psychologically, as a state of mind. And I think that Rousseau, although in many ways he was very strange character and a lot of arguments about Rousseau, this concept of the state of nature as still valid as a state of mind, I think is actually very important. And in fact, Debbie and I were talking this morning about how even as adults, we try very hard not to lose that middle class simplicity and the middle class values with which we were both raised. If you're raised extremely poor, and you are forced to fight for everything you have, it creates a kind of grasping character. You're always sort of running to be first in line because the first guy is the guy who gets to eat first and that kind of thing. And then if you're raised as an aristocrat, you're used to sort of looking at everybody as if they should be tying your shoelaces. And those sorts of attitudes can persist for many, many years. So holding on to the good things that you had as a child, this is, I think, what Dante is getting at here. He's talking about Florence in living memory, or Florence in the previous generation. We can also apply it individually to our own lives and look at our own younger selves. We can't go back to those days, but we can preserve some of the virtues of those days in the lives that we live now.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.